Now to your questions about kids and COVID. Vaccinating children is viewed as a crucial next step toward herd immunity. The Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is already approved in our country for ages 16 and older. In coming months, the age range is expected to open up to younger people as its application works through the regulatory process. Has your child contracted COVID? Would you let your child be part of a vaccine trial? Are you concerned about how variants affect kids? Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234. Dr. James Conway is a professor in the Department of Pediatrics and the Division of Pediatric Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Conway, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Great to be back with you.
Good morning. So Pfizer and Moderna, they started vaccine trials in March for children as young as 6 months old. How do these vaccine trials work in kids?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the first thing that they have to sort out is what the actual dose should be. I think people need to remember that back last spring in 2020, first trials in both of those vaccines had to sort out for adults how much of the antigen, how much of the stimulant to the immune system you actually needed to get into that fine balance in that kind of Goldilocks spot we talk about, where the side effects are tolerable and you get as much immune response as you need. And so that's basically what they had to do first in these younger kids is work out the dosing, and then they start giving it that dose to larger numbers of kids to then see how it works and look at all those side effects.
I would imagine that's kind of tricky because kids have a lot of growing in their body that's going on, a lot of changing. So how do you determine the right doses?
Yeah, I mean, people really have to be willing to sign up and put their kids into these kinds of studies. And, you know, they try a small dose, a medium dose, and a little bit higher dose. You know, they'll basically, for the older kids, so they'll do the 6 to 11-year-olds first, and they'll give them, you know, one group will get the same doses they're giving to the adolescents and young adults. And then they'll also try smaller doses to see if you can get away with less. And then minimize the side effects, but still get that same amount of immune response. And then you gradually work your way down into the 3 to 5 year olds, and then eventually the 6 month olds up to 2 year olds. So it is a, you know, and this has to happen with all vaccines, but it does take a little bit of time to work that stuff out. You know, we always have to remember that safety is paramount, and every parent knows that and wants their kid to be protected, but we need to do it in a safe and effective way.
What are your thoughts on whether we need to vaccinate children?
Yeah, I think that what we've started to see is that as we've gotten vaccines into many of the older individuals and into people with comorbidities, that it is really the younger groups now that are really driving the ongoing transmission and circulation. Certainly the young adults are very important, but we've seen more and more that as people are returning to more normal activities and kids are back in school and sports, that they can transmit amongst themselves and they can be drivers within the community for ongoing transmission, and they can transmit back into their families. And so until we get enough people vaccinated, we're going to still have these outbreaks in circulation. So kids are really going to be a very important part of getting this all shut down.
As we look at these outbreaks in kids, in lieu of having a COVID vaccine at the moment for young children, how do we protect our kids? What should we be doing?
Yeah, I think that we've really worked out a lot of the mitigation activities as far as masking and you know, distancing and stuff, especially when people are indoors. I think one of the most important things is really people being honest with themselves and their families. And if people are feeling illness of any sort, that those kids really need to be kept out and kept home. You know, I think the other part is that as many adults as we can get immunized as quickly as possible, it just diminishes the number of vulnerable people where transmission can keep occurring. But for now, I think people need to be patient and keep doing all these things we've been doing, which are relatively successful.
What about mask wearing and children, especially if they're outdoors at recess or maybe in a summer camp and that's completely outdoors? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think if they're outdoors and separated by some distance, you know, I think that it's fine to be unmasked. The problem is that, you know, most play and most socialization, you know, people like to be closer together. And, you know, what we know about this virus is that any kind of cough, sneeze, yell, you know, we've all heard the transmission stories about the choirs and musical instruments and all those things, that this is really an aerosol disease. And so anything where kids are in close contact and are going to be aerosolizing their secretions is really going to be a risky proposition. So I think outdoors, you know, things like baseball, tennis, golf, like all those things are ideally suited for these kinds of things. But when you get into close proximity with others, that's where transmission can occur. So the risk is obviously a lot lower when there's wind and sunshine and all those things, but it's not zero. And so I think that's where there's been a lot of debate about which sports and which kinds of activities still need to maintain those masks. It's really, if you can't maintain a good 6 foot distance between the kids, that's where people really need to be considering masking.
What are you seeing as far as asymptomatic carriers and kids? What is the research saying?
Well, I mean, certainly kids are just as likely as adults to get infected. It's just that they don't seem to as frequently get severe symptoms. And so they do, unfortunately, have asymptomatic cases that then can transmit to others. You know, one of the things we've seen that's troubling lately is that there has been a downtick in the number of kids getting tested. And we don't think that that's necessarily just that they're not having much disease. It's just that I think people are tired of it. It's inconvenient. And then when you do test positive, obviously, there's all the ramifications of quarantine and isolation. So that's one of the problems with kids, is that kids, you know, often do have asymptomatic or mild disease. And if they're not tested and it's not identified, then it goes unrecognized.
Mm. We are at the intersection of kids and COVID with Dr. James Conway. He's Associate Director for Health Sciences at the UW-Madison Global Health Institute. What do you wonder about drug trials in kids? What do you want to ask a pediatric infectious disease specialist? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation ahead with Dr. Conway on the Ideas Network. Now, the race to prevent the spread of COVID in kids. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, allowed both Pfizer and Moderna to study the effects of their vaccines on children as young as 6 months. Pfizer announced at the end of March that 12 to 15-year-olds might start getting vaccinated by fall. What questions do you have about how COVID can affect children and young people? How is the pandemic influencing the choices you make around your kids' summer plans? Conversation is here, 800-642-1234. We have UW Pediatric Infectious Disease Specialist James Conway as our guide. Dr. Conway, let's talk variants. Earlier this month, there was an outbreak at a Dane County Child Care Center with more than 30 people testing positive, including 16 kids. Infections included the B.1.1.7 variant. Are you seeing more spread with these variants among children?
Yeah, I mean, what we're starting to see is that as the testing becomes more available to identify these variants, that these things are popping up all over the place. And, you know, many of these variants are more transmissible. They don't require quite as much virus to cause disease in the subsequent people that are exposed. And so we are starting to see, at least with the limited monitoring that's being done here in the U.S., that there are more and more of these variants popping up. But I think people need to be cautious about getting too alarmed about it. You know, we know that these viruses aren't that smart and they make mistakes constantly, which is what these mutations are. And most mutations, if you think about them, are actually negative. They're what we call deleterious. In other words, they're bad for the virus. So only some of them actually are an advantage to the virus. So they're happening constantly. And you're going to hear about this constantly. You know, just this week, there's a New York City variant and a Columbus, Ohio and an Oregon variant. We're going to be identifying these a lot. The most important thing is that what we're seeing is that the current vaccines here in the U.S. are really holding up pretty nicely and are continuing to protect against most of these variants quite well.
So vaccines holding up nicely, you know, the Pfizer and Moderna are a two-dose series. Would kids be on that same trajectory of having two doses of the vaccine?
Yeah, I think that's the expectation that, you know, for most vaccines that we give, there are multiple doses as we sort of prime the immune system and then boost it. And then that's one of the conversations that's still going to have to happen is how often, if is it going to be necessary to continue to reboost with these vaccines? So I think that for the time being, we're going to plan on kids requiring two doses as we do for adults.
And we're seeing, you know, news out that adults aren't, you know, making that second dose happen as much as they should. What is the importance of a booster shot?
Yeah, I think we need to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt. You know, I think if you're a glass half empty person, you know, 8% of people not getting their second dose is concerning. But I'm a glass half full person, and 92%, you know, given that we're 4 months into this, is really pretty exceptional. And many of these folks that you're hearing about that have missed their second doses haven't really missed them. You know, we're hearing more and more reports as supplies have been sort of shifted around that people have had actually some difficulty finding the same vaccine for their second dose. So I think those things are being ironed out. You know, certainly there are some people that are are waiting. But I think a lot of it is just, you know, sort of trying to find a slot and a time. And so that's one of the reasons that the federal government this week has announced that more pharmacies are going to be offering vaccines, and that the vaccine sites should be able to accommodate anybody that shows up and gets an appointment that can demonstrate that they got a first dose of a vaccine somewhere, because we need to make it easier for people to finish up that series. But I think 8% is really acceptable at this point, and should be able to be filled in with a little bit more outreach and making sure that people have opportunities to get those doses.
Let's pause and talk a moment here about the J&J vaccine, the Johnson & Johnson, the concerns about blood clots. What do you see by way of this vaccine and pediatric trials?
Yeah, I think it's going to be some time as they move into that direction. They certainly have an intention to also test and gain some experience and then ultimately seek approval in children. But as we've seen, you know, Pfizer was sort of first out of the gate, and then Moderna was a little bit behind, and then Johnson & Johnson is a little bit behind them. So I think we'll ultimately see that vaccine also being tested in younger kids. They're working on adolescents right now. So ultimately, I think that we're going to have even more arrows in our quiver to fight this battle.
Do you think a two-shot versus a one-shot series, I mean, one and done, would you be supportive of that? Or do you think that ultimately we'll need boosters for the COVID vaccine?
Yeah, it really remains to be seen. I think that you're starting to hear people talking about that there's at least the likelihood that we'll have to give a single booster sometime in the near future, largely to basically keep up with the variants. But I think it really, time will tell how often we're going to need to see these boosters come in.
Dr. James Conway is a vaccine researcher, pediatric infectious disease specialist at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. What questions do you have about spread in kids or mask wearing? Are kids in the classroom? How is it going? Have there been exposures? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation ahead with Dr. Conway. News update is next on the Ideas Network. Now, COVID and kids. Here in Wisconsin, more than 26,000 children age 9 and younger have tested positive for COVID. In the age group spanning 10 to 19-year-olds, the number of confirmed cases has grown to almost 71,000. That's the latest data from the Department of Health Services. What do you want to know about symptoms and spread? What about Miss C, the multi-system inflammatory syndrome that emerged in the early days of the pandemic? Conversation, your questions right here, 800-642-1234. We have UW Health Pediatric Infectious Disease Specialist James Conway, who stays with us. Dr. Conway, what are you seeing in the hospital? Are kids needing to be hospitalized due to COVID?
Yeah, we've seen an uptick in the number of kids that are actually getting infected and getting symptomatic disease. We've also started to hear more reports of MISC cases starting to flare up again. And this is fairly typical when we see each of these waves, then in the month afterwards is when this MISC disease shows up. So I think, as people recall, we did have a little bit of an uptick nationally around the spring break period. And so subsequently, we have seen a few more kids recently with these things. And I think it's really unfortunate. I mean, this is largely a preventable disease for most people. And it's unfortunate when kids do get it and end up in the hospital.
So with MISC, what are the complications you're seeing with the organs in the body?
Yeah, so this is really an interesting phenomenon, because it's essentially the immune system fights it off and then just doesn't shut itself off or keeps going and kind of escalating. And so really every organ in the body can get involved. You know, we worry most about the heart, but we've seen kids that have had a lot of GI problems, a lot of vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal pain, and the liver can be affected as well. But really any organ can be involved. So this gets started, in addition to all the things we need to do to shut it down, then it's a lot of extra testing just to see how extensive it was.
What is the recovery like?
It can be pretty rocky. I mean, it can be, for most of these kids, you know, some months before they're really back up and feeling like themselves again. And there are, unfortunately, going to be some kids who have lifelong issues that, if their heart in particular or their lungs take significant damage that sometimes could be irreversible, you know. And so that's where COVID is just so challenging, because it's the acute infection I think that people are most focused on, but kids really do have this very unique phenomenon just because of their very vigorous immune systems.
So circling back to vaccine trials, how would MISC affect these vaccine trials for young kids?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really important question, because one of the things we have to be absolutely clear about is that kids are not just little adults. And so because they have this unique phenomenon of how their immune systems work, the trials need to not only show that they're tolerable side effects on the front end, but that when they then do get exposed to the virus and actually occasionally will get infected, that we need to make sure that there isn't an enhanced immune response that leads to something like MISC or worse. And so that's all going to be part of these trials, and why people need to be patient that these are going to take a little while. It's not just going to be the first couple of weeks making sure the side effects are okay. It's going to be watching them over time, especially as they're out and getting exposed to the virus.
We've heard of long haulers in adult cases. Have you seen any evidence of long-term health effects from COVID lingering in kids?
Yeah, we do see kids that have survived and gotten through the initial infection who, because of the damage, then do have persistent symptoms. You know, most of them are being managed by subspecialists. So if a kid has particular lung damage or neurologic impact from their initial infection, those subspecialists manage them. We're also starting to hear more about these kids that are having this kind of long-term fatigue thing. You know, again, I think we did a very good job of protecting kids early in the pandemic with schools being closed. And so I think people did get this impression that kids just aren't as significantly affected. As we've gone back to more normal activity in kids and more kids are getting infected, as you know, shared the data on what we're seeing, we're now starting to recognize that kids suffer with this in many of the same ways that adults do.
You know, I also see in my own kids that they really follow the public health guidance. I mean, they're there washing their hands when I turn around, and I really appreciate that the message is sinking in with them. Have you seen that?
Yeah, kids really are very proactive when given the right messaging and really given ownership of their own health. You know, I think it's one of those things with vaccines in general as a corollary that, you know, if you ask a kid, would you rather have a disease or get a shot? I think most kids will opt for the shot. And similarly, if you tell them that do these things and you can actually lead a reasonably normal existence and still see your friends and things, I think most kids are very good about adopting those things. I think that it's just that they need reasons and good logic behind it rather than just being told to do things because you say so.
We're talking with Dr. James Conway, who is a vaccine researcher, professor in the Division of Pediatric Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, taking your questions about kids and COVID at 800-642-1234. Barb is with us from Crivitz. Hi, Barb. What is on your mind?
Good morning. I would like to know your guest's knowledge and opinion on children wearing their masks all day at school. For instance, my 8-year-old granddaughter said she gets real sleepy sometimes, and the 11-year-old says she gets a little bit of a headache. So I'd like to know his opinion on how wearing masks all day long may affect children.
Thank you, Barb. Yeah.
Yeah, Barb, no, it's a good question. I think nobody's thrilled with having to wear masks for long periods of time. Certainly wearing them all day in the hospital and seeing our patients, it gets annoying for all of us. And, you know, those things pulling on your ears or whatever type of mask you're wearing, you know, does sometimes cause a muscle tension headache. And we've seen, you know, especially the nurses being really creative about different ways to attach their masks. So I think kids do, you know, need to be conscious of sort of what the fit is like and what they're like, and think about different ways to attach them so they're not pulling it on their ears. They certainly deserve and need some break from masking as well. And so being able to get kids outside and allowing them to unmask for a while is really very helpful. So I think that, you know, the things that we all experience as adults wearing masks are very similar in kids. And I think we need to be very conscious of that, because everybody does need a break from it, because it really does get annoying after a long period of time.
That's what my 11-year-old said. She said, Mom, I went out to recess and I went just in a little corner. I took off my mask just to massage the back of my ears because they were really hurting. So I can see how that fatigue can also, you know, give some irritation in behind the ears. I want to ask you, Dr. Conway, what about vaccine hesitancy? What do you say to parents who may be hesitant about vaccinating their kids against COVID, ultimately?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I mean, certainly we understand that there's lots of questions, and even within the healthcare professionals, people had a lot of questions about the development of these and how quickly we were able to do it. And I think we did get lucky. And in many ways, we're going to look back and say this was a medical miracle that we were able to do it as efficiently and as safe as we have. You know, I think that what we try to help people understand is that, you know, these trials that were done, you know, really were done the same way we always do these trials. And we were fortunate that the technology to develop these vaccines was already in the can for a lot of this. And so that was part of the reason that we were able to move this forward so well. The only thing that really got shortened was the understanding of how durable the immunity was going to be and how long it was going to last. And I think everybody's been very comfortable that we were willing to sort of get started with this, and then we'll follow people and decide when and if boosters are needed. As far as, you know, people that were sort of in the wait and see and wanted to see how things go, you know, we're up well over 200 million doses have been delivered now and administered here in the United States. And so I think that the wait and see time is over. You know, those original trials were 40, 50, 60,000 people. We've now had literally almost 100 million people have gotten both each of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. And so we've got now abundant data on the safety of these things. And so that part really has been answered. Most importantly, we now know how well these things work, that there are extraordinarily few breakthrough cases. I mean, we had quoted that we were hopeful that these were going to be 90 to 95% effective. And, you know, the data released by the state this week shows that less than 1% of people that have been vaccinated have contracted COVID. And when they do, it's extraordinarily mild. So we've really got the safety and efficacy information that people need to make these decisions. And I think it really is important for people to know that this is really our one way out of this, is to vaccinate and vaccinate broadly, both here in the U.S. and globally, so we can get this thing under control and get back to some version of a new normal.
Okay, so give us some plausible timelines here. How soon might we see vaccines be authorized for younger ages? What might that rollout look like?
Yeah, I think we're pretty optimistic that we're going to see vaccines for the 12 to 15 or 12 to 17 year olds for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine sometime in early summer. And so we should be able to move into vaccinating those populations over the summer, so that fall semester for the middle and high school kids should and could look pretty normal, as long as people move on this and get their kids immunized. The younger age groups, then, we're going to start to see data emerging later in the summer and into the early fall. And so I think that there's optimism that there will be enough data available to start discussing authorization for those vaccines, perhaps as early as the fall. So I would say that we will likely have vaccines available and probably be able to start immunizing the younger kids by the end of 2021 or early 2022 at the latest.
You know, stepping back for a moment on childhood vaccinations and what the pandemic caused many people to stay at home and maybe not visit for those regular well-check visits and get all the vaccines that they need. Nationwide, the CDC has found childhood vaccination rates have dipped during pandemic lockdowns. Does that concern you at all for kids being on track with their vaccinations?
It does. It concerns me very much, because this is a global phenomenon. You know, I think that it was understandable that while we were figuring this out and trying to figure out how to prevent transmission, that we did essentially ask people to stay away from health centers unless they were absolutely in need. But then since we've returned and kind of figured all that out, we've seen that, you know, overall screening for all sorts of conditions and preventive care has been below normal levels. This is, again, a global phenomenon. The kids all over the world are missing out on vaccines. And so we're already starting to see resurgence of measles and other vaccine preventable diseases globally. And so if we get enough people missing out on vaccines here, where we really start to lose that herd immunity, it's not going to be a stretch to see that as travel starts to resume, that we're going to see return of many of those infections. And then in addition, a lot of the childhood vaccines are for things that we all actually carry on a regular basis. And it's just that kids' little immune systems don't necessarily deal well with them. So things like pneumococcus, you know, that causes ear infections and sinus infections, but also can cause bad pneumonias and meningitis. You know, those are bugs that are around everywhere. And the more kids that are missing out on those vaccines, the more kids are going to be subjected to those diseases. So this is really concerning. And I really encourage people to be proactive, especially now, May and June, when the disease isn't circulating at high levels here in Wisconsin. This is a great time to get kids caught up with vaccines, and especially so we don't have too much of a bottleneck when we get to back to school time into August, we can't really have everybody all at once. And then layer on top of that, the fact that we'll probably be actually starting to immunize those middle and high school kids for COVID towards the summer. So I think right now is a great time when things are sort of quiet to start being proactive about catching up on vaccines that were missed.
Dr. Conway, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. Always a pleasure.
Dr. James Conway is a professor in the Division of Pediatric Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.